another one of these small ones.
Committee on Rules and Administration will come to order. Members, we have both the, we will have an amendment for both, one to House File 2245 for K-12, and one to House File 2268 for taxes. They are both at the revisers being worked on, and the suggested procedure will be that we go over the bills with the authors and the spreadsheets, and as they are produced at the revisers, a committee report will be printed at the same time for adoption without recommendation. And as we discuss, we will get hard copies here within the hour, and at that time, I would propose we scan them the best we can, read to any amendments we think are necessary, and then if the committee were so willing, get the committee reports to the floor before 7, and then just have an understanding that we will adopt whatever amendment, if any, this committee decides. It could be without recommendation, and I'm sure that even the author might have some technical amendments by the time we took this up, 12 hours or 10 hours from now, whenever that would be. So why don't we just, let's see how we're doing. We'll just work through this. Again, we won't do anything that the committee's not comfortable with, and we'll do the best we can. So, Senator Bach, why don't you tell us, working from the spreadsheet or in general, try to give us the best explanation you can of what we're going to see soon.
Senator Bach. On the spreadsheet, let me start by taking you down to the middle of the page where it says corporate franchise tax. That is the revenue that's in this bill. It's the Senate language on the corporate foreign operating corporations, the corporate loopholes. It brings $244 million in 08-09, $194 in 10 and 11. Target for the bill was actually 220 in 08-09 and 200 in 10 and 11. So all the corporate loophole money, even though the money's being carried here, it's not all actually being spent in the bill. The bill spends pretty close to that number because there are some small little revenue raisers in the bill. And if I could just start from the top.
Mr. Chair. Senator Bach, could you repeat those last two number target numbers?
In 08-09, $220 million, and in 10 and 11, $200.
Thank you.
And there's a split of one-time money in the first year, or?
Well, I mean, I don't know that it matters. I think I was told that the ongoing money in 809 was 170, and there was 50 in one time, so the total was 220.
Senator Bach.
So starting at the top, the AMT exemption phase out of the threshold is when we fixed the AMT for most filers last year, we did not index that phase out for inflation, and this does that. It costs us money to do that, but it's good policy that that phase out happen.
Senator Bach, if you do recall, if you could mention if these were in the original Senate omnibus bill.
No, I believe this.
This one was not.
Was not.
Okay. As you go through, if you can just have a recollection of whether it was in or out, that would be helpful.
Line 2 is a Murphy provision. Last year when we did the combat stipend for veterans serving in combat or not veterans, actually, military people serving in combat zones. Last year, we gave them a $59 a month stipend, and what didn't happen that maybe should, you could argue should have happened, is it didn't include National Guard people who were serving in combat zones. So this provision includes National Guard people that are serving in combat zones. And the next provision increases that $59 stipend that I mentioned that's in current law, increases that to $120 a month. So it doubles, plus a little bit, the amount that military people serving in combat zones receive from the state. Contractor payment withholding requirement.
Yes. Thank you.
This is a provision that requires contractors who hire 1099 employees or 1099 subcontractors, it requires them that when they issue their 1099 to the independent contractor, requires them to do a 2% withholding and send that to the state. And that you see that actually raises about $3 million in 08 and 09. This provision was actually a provision that was carried in the governor's budget a couple of years ago, and then for whatever reason didn't make it into the final conference committee report. We believe, and revenue believes with us, that there is quite a bit of underreporting of income when people are classified as independent contractors. And this would allow the Department of Revenue to get a copy of the 1099 with the withholding. They'll have the address of the individual, and they would better be able to do some random audits on 1099 individuals to try and improve the compliance in that area.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question?
Senator
Bach, is that all 1099s, even those that just meet the minimum threshold of being required to send a 1099?
It's over $600.
That's the minimum?
Is the minimum, and it's only for employees who work in the construction industry.
Only construction? Okay, thank you for that clarification.
So, the next provision is a small revenue raiser. This of $4.6 million 08-09, this closes up a loophole where you could have Minnesota deferred compensation while you're an employee in Minnesota. And then if you move your residency to another state, say you move to Florida where there wasn't income tax liability, under current law you can take that deferred compensation that was earned in Minnesota and not have Minnesota tax liability. This closes that loophole so that if you earned Minnesota income, you deferred it here, you are subject to Minnesota income taxes if you leave the state. Prohibit deductions of fines and penalties. This is a provision that says that you cannot deduct fines and penalties from your taxable income. And it raises a small amount of money. Subtraction for AmeriCorps. This costs a small amount of money. What this is for people that are enrolled in the AmeriCorps program. They receive education stipends that they can use to do to buy down tuition. And under current law, those are treated as taxable income. And this would allow them to not be taxed. And I believe an AmeriCorps participant receives, I want to say, a $4,000 stipend or something in that neighborhood to offset college tuition. This would allow that education stipend to not be subject to Minnesota taxation. The individual income provision, this is Langseth provision. This allows an investor in a small startup business to be able to take a 25% tax credit for the investment that they make in a small startup business. It has a $25,000 cap per investor, and I believe,
is there another cap?
An additional cap of $600,000 for a pass-through entity. This is a provision that is administered, an income tax credit that is administered through deed, and the governor had something very much like this in his budget proposal. This is something the House felt pretty strongly about. They had a straight-out appropriation to the small businesses. The Senate had a tax credit. We felt that the tax credit was a better provision, and so did Deed, actually. And then the corporate franchise tax, you see the revenue raiser in the bill. And council has to tell me exactly what we did for air pollution control facilities.
Mr. Chair, that was actually a Department of Revenue suggestion in order to deal with the exemption for pollution control facilities. Currently is in the corporate franchise tax, basically just to front load it so that we get it taken care of now and get it into current law and current conformity with the federal government.
And the sales and use tax, those first three provisions are all department technical provisions. Sales tax exemptions, the tax committee for years has talked about the delivery of aggregate material, and there has been concern on the department, on the part of the department for a long time, that there was going to be a lawsuit in the way that they handled aggregate delivery, when it was taxed, when it was not taxed. So what the agreement we finally came to with revenue and the aggregate industry was that if aggregate was being delivered on road construction, it would not be subject to tax. The SACSOG provision, the exemption for public safety radio communication equipment for Itasca County. Itasca County is moving forward with putting up these towers before the state money is available. And if the state money is available, they would not be subject to sales tax. Nobody else who's received state money for this kind of equipment has paid sales tax. This just allows Itasca County to not pay sales tax on those purchases, makes them the same as everybody else, except they're just actually getting probably several years ahead of the state money. The exemption for construction materials for low-income housing, you can see that carries a pretty significant cost. We just didn't have the money in 08-09 to do it, so we did it effective in fiscal year 10. The charitable organization holding a Minnesota vehicle dealer's license. This apparently there is only one charitable organization that's in this situation. It's the United Way. There's a small cost to that. Wastewater treatment facilities. The House came with a whole page full of them that they were exempting from, they were refunding back half of the sales tax on construction material on wastewater treatment plants all over the state. What we finally decided on was to do the Minnetonka water treatment plant for $140,000. That plant was built, it's already been built. It was built a few years ago. This is capital equipment that would have been subject to the sales tax exemption in current law, but because of the way the contract was written, the contractor paid the sales tax. The city didn't purchase the equipment. So the sales tax was paid. If the city of Minnetonka had purchased the equipment like other cities do, there would not have been sales tax paid. So there's really nothing new in this. If the contract had been written properly with the contractor, this the city would not have expended this money. We're doing on the page two, the Fergus Falls Historic Rehabilitation Credit. That's a historic credit for the what was the Regional Treatment Center in Fergus Falls. And the city of Fergus Falls is negotiating now with the Department of Administration. Admin wants to sell that building to the city of Fergus Falls. Health and Human Services is renting out part of the building right now, a small part. So there's some discussions going on. A number of years ago, the legislature issued or authorized bonds, I believe for up to $10 million for the demolition of this building. And there's some pretty strong feeling by members of the tax committee on both sides that we ought to try and give Fergus Falls some opportunity to get this building to stop the wrecking ball, you might say. So we gave them the opportunity to have a historic rehabilitation credit on it. Border city allocations is something the tax committee has seen before. Those are $1.5 million one time for a number of cities along the Dakota border with Minnesota. Chairman, I have to ask our fiscal analyst. I see we're carrying the interest here on the budget reserve, but I don't believe we spent it. I believe we're just carrying it here.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. We do have the interest identified here, along with an item right below it, the securities registration fees, removal of the cap. But you can see at the bottom of the page when we get there that we isolate all of the major revenues in this bill and then things balance out. So we're really not spending those revenues outside of our target.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Frederick.
Chairman, Senator Bach, the interest earnings on the budget reserve increase, is that the assumption that our budget reserve will essentially double? Is that where that's coming from?
All the assumption on that is that we would add $150 million to the reserve, which is about $3 million over the governor. And you'll see at the bottom of the spreadsheet that the Senate is proposing that we put $150 million into the reserve. The governor had proposed $47 million, and then in his supplemental budget, he added $100 million to it. So it's $3 million over the governor.
And members recall, we were at 629.
Right.
Senate was not successful in holding that. So far, at least.
Senate File 610, the Revenue Department and Technical Things has some small revenue raisers in the department's technical bill. The transition reserve is money that we didn't spend in 08-09 that we transferred into 10 and 11. The lion's share of this bill is spent on property tax relief, so we're doing 1 year of property tax relief in 09 and 2 years in 10 and 11. So we raise more money in the first biennium than we spend, so we move that money into 10 and 11. The Hockey Heritage Surcharge, 10 cents a ticket for professional men's hockey to support the Hockey Hall of Fame. The House brought that provision and wanted to do that. So we agreed to do it.
Chairman, do you know Mr. Chairman, is there, there's another $120,000 somewhere else for the Hockey Hall of Fame. Are you aware of that?
I believe there's a requirement. I believe the IRRB is putting money in with the understanding there'll be some kind of a match from somewhere else. And it's not being carried in this bill, but.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, there's an appropriation in another bill, I think, for this too. But
I haven't been part of these discussions. Yeah. Senator Tomasoni, who has his jersey hanging in the Hockey Hall of Fame, has been meeting with Representative Rukavina, and I do believe they met with the Wild about this. Can't tell you that the Wild supports this or doesn't support it. I don't know.
That seems like a low amount of money to raise. This is a 10 cents on every ticket to the Wild game? It just seems like such a low amount.
Should have a percentage.
Aren't those 125, Senator Metzen, aren't those $125 tickets?
Mine are $16. They went up from 10 a few years ago to 16. I'm up in the nosebleed. So I don't know what the expensive ones are.
It's 10 cents a ticket.
Oh, it's 10 cents.
Mr. Chairman, we're not talking about 10%. We're talking about 10 cents a ticket.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's not quite.
It takes a lot of tickets to get to $37,000.
Okay. $16? Is that what you pay up there? Really?
I need magnifying glasses to see the players.
I'll put your glasses on.
Can you see them?
Not like your Timberwolf tickets, Mr. Chairman, where you're on the main floor low, you know.
Can you see the puck any better from where you're sitting now than you did when you were playing goalie?
I used to be able to follow the puck. It's hard, though. But.
Senator Bach.
The tax expenditure changes and the credits and refunds. House came in with a new property tax refund program of $223 million. The Senate came in with $24 million and some change, and we settled on $18.2 million in 2009. And then the number escalates some because of increased participation in 10 and 11. The governor, I believe, was at about $7 million there in the property tax refund area.
Did this generally move the income bracket or the housing? What happened? What kind of adjustments were made in the formula?
No, Mr. Chairman, I can't tell you until I see the language. We spent a lot of time discussing this. The challenge for us was to make changes in the program. It was very difficult for us to get a run on what the cost was. So I believe we did some scaling off of the governor's proposal, scaled the governor's proposal up, I believe.
Okay.
Pretty certain that's what we ended up doing. Farmland class rate change for homesteads. Current law, the class rate on farmland homesteads is 0.55. This changes it to 0.5. Actually raises a little bit of money because of the property tax refund impact. The rationale there that the farm boys made was with limited market value phasing out, they were going to see some significant property tax increases on ag land, so they wanted to take the class rate down slightly.
Mr. Chairman, what's going on out in the country is farmland prices are going up quite rapidly because of the increased price for corn. So I think this category is still going to see a fair increase in property taxes for which they make out the check.
Yeah, this is probably pretty small, but it's what we were able to do, and it costs us about $285,000 to do this.
Senator Langside.
Mr. Chair, I think it's 40% of the limited market value in Minnesota is in farmland, so it's going to go up quite substantially in the future. This I think will just slow down the increase is all it'll really do.
Senator Bach.
Local government aid, we put $80 million a year in. The county program aid, $35 million a year.
Is
little uncertain exactly on the county transition aid, Mr. Chairman. We'll have to get back to you. There is a one-time aid to Pine County, a provision that the House brought in and felt very strongly about, $250,000. There is, the committee felt that if there was a local unit of government that really got the short end of the 2001 property tax reform, it was townships when all of their HACA was taken away from them and all of their local government aid was taken away from them. So we put some aid to townships in here. This is about, this number is about 20% of what they had in 2001.
Members, the county transition aid was an aid that was put in place for counties during the reduction in local government aid in 2001, I believe, and there were some counties that were going to fall off of the county program aid formula, and this kept them whole, and by making it permanent, we maintain those counties on the program.
And then the property tax refund interaction, we make a little bit of money here with the interaction with increasing LGA and county program aid and aid to towns. Saves us a little bit of money there in the property tax refund program. The payments to local governments in Manoamin, this is an issue of the casino up in Manoamin is currently being transferred to trust land status. So that tax base is going away for Manoamin, and this increases a payment to them to make up for the lost tax capacity of the casino and whatever associated property is. I'm not sure of the actual footprint, but the largest piece is the casino. The increased PILT payment for loop lands is $62,000 in 9, and it goes up slightly. We give Taylor Falls an increase of $30,000 to their local government aid. This is an issue that they had a $30,000 bump a number of years ago, and it, for whatever reason, I don't know if it went away in 2001 or when it happened, but the issue that Taylor, the argument that Taylor Falls makes is they have a state park within the boundary of the city, and they have additional law enforcement and other issues related to all of the state park visitors. So they felt that they were deserving of some additional help from the state because of the burden that puts on.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, in some years we've actually carried a direct appropriation in the environment bill to help them with this too, and I don't recall that being even before the Environment Finance Division this year. I think it's very justifiable because when somebody gets in trouble at that state park, it's Taylor Falls that goes helps them.
Sir Bach?
And then for Browns Valley, the flooding situation, $100,000 of LGA. Crookston, Crookston had a flooding situation also, and this proposes to give Crookston for the next 5 years a $200,000 per year bump in their local government aid to cover some of the costs. They actually came to the legislature this year looking for a local sales tax to pay for some of these costs. And the tax committee just felt that a local sales tax wasn't the best idea for the city of Crookston, and that the likelihood of them probably passing it are probably very slim, considering the competition they have from their closely neighboring communities of East Grand Forks and Grand Forks, North Dakota. So we felt it would be better to give them just some additional LGA to address those infrastructure costs they have relative to flooding. The Grand Marais Fire Relief, it's a two-year appropriation to the city of Grand Marais. Grand Marais is at the start of the Gunflint Trail, and I'm happy to tell you that the most recent report I read in the Duluth paper tonight will be in today's paper is that the fire in Minnesota is now 50% contained. But there, Grand Marais and Cook County have incurred tremendous cost in fighting that wildfire. So I expect that the language probably should have made this appropriation out to the city and the county and let them kind of figure out, assess who incurred more costs. Rockville, $30,000 LGA increase one time.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bach, the individual city LGA increases are reflected as zeros. Is that accounted for in the larger local government aid increase, or why is that?
It's carved out.
That means it's just carved out of the $80 million. In the property tax area, Representative Rukavina and I had a bill to exempt disabled veterans from having to pay property taxes. And that provision actually raises some money because we save some money on the property tax refund program by having disabled veterans not pay property taxes. And that's what both of those provisions do. One saves some money on the market value credit, and one saves some money on the property tax refund. Reduce the threshold for 4D housing. Their current law, for a project to be considered low income, I believe, is it 75% of the housing units have to be low income? This will change that threshold to 20% of the units in a housing project have to be low income. That's been money. To remember why that costs $105,000 to do.
More projects will qualify.
So what did they end up? It's 25. What did he say? Is it
20?
Mr. Chair, members, it reduces the threshold and provides a property tax, a bit of property tax relief for those business or those that type of housing. And the threshold was set higher, and it comes down, meaning more properties are eligible for that slight exemption.
This has been in the omnibus bill numerous times.
Because there are more low-income people in these units, so it costs us a little money to do that. The Gunflint Trail provision, an amount up to $500,000 to Cook County. What we propose doing, the last numbers that I saw showed that they've lost about 134 buildings on the Gunflint Trail because of the fire, and I believe 62 of them were actually residences. What this would do is abate their property taxes for the second half of 2007 for their October payment and for their property taxes in 2008. We just felt they shouldn't be paying property taxes on buildings that don't exist anymore. And we don't have a hard number on the fiscal note. We know this number is probably rich, but we just don't know how much it's going to cost you. But it's an effort to keep the county whole by abating property taxes on the buildings that have burned second half of 07 and for 08. The bottom of the spreadsheet, the Department of Revenue has been concerned for a number of years about being taken to court by the utilities for the way that the department has been valuing utilities' appraisals. So the department went through a rule change process that is going to significantly lower the value of the utility property. And they agreed in the rule to phase it in over a three-year period. The assessment changes. And what the Murphy bill did is raise the class rate on the utility property to keep those host communities whole. So there is a property there really isn't a property tax increase for the utilities. It really kind of keeps them where they are. It phases in as the market value of the property comes down, the class rate phases up at the same time, so that the net impact to the utility and to the host communities, our intention is for that to be neutral.
Susan, property tax relief, one bracket change, what is that? It's 1B.
Do you want me to address the next one? It's one of theirs. Where they're just start changing the rate. This to save this, to save it.
This is to
David?
Yeah, that's what they want.
David.
Mr. Chair, members, the top line item is a house provision that was part of their citizen property tax relief proposal, and the 1B household is a disabled household classification, and it basically increases the bracket for that classification, which would then reduce the property taxes, and it results in a slight revenue gain because of a reduction in the property tax refund.
The homesteaded resorts, we raise the market value that's subject to the 0.5 rate, and that costs a little bit of money. The Met Council transit bonds, we took current law there on the taxing district and gave the Met Council the ability to sell bonds for $36 million. The Senate provision actually was to increase the size of the taxing jurisdiction to take in some of the surrounding counties and raise the amount of bonds sold to $44 million. But the House just felt very reluctant to go there. So we took the House provision. I did talk with Senator Dibble, and he was fine with doing that, and we'll live to fight another day about the idea of expanding the taxing jurisdiction for transit bonding purposes. Property tax provision relative to the general ed is a subtraction. Under current law, when the legislature, through the taconite tax, provides some money for schools, there is an offset, and the taconite schools end up losing some state aid as a result of that. It's about $1 million. And the reason that we think that is good policy is the mines are not subject to excess levies, so there's no opportunity to get any other money off of them. And so when we do try to get a little money off of them, we end up with an offset that reduces the state aid. In the other section, Representative Lencheski felt very strongly about doing a, in fact, this was probably the provision she felt strongest about in the bill, that she wanted to do a study on the fiscal disparities program. That is something that the Department of Revenue will contract out. And the exact language, I can't remember. It's, we'll have to take a look at it when we get to the when we get to the language. The 1099 tax reporting is, look at that language too. That's more on the 1099 issue. I believe it is the department does a report back on the auditing that they've done relative to 1099s, and the department tells us they need $73,000 to do that report. The SACSOG provision on Itasca County is a transaction fee on title transfer of land for the Minnesota Steel Project, and we waive that fee. Paul Rivers Center debt, $2 million in FY10. Nonprofit taxpayer assistance grants, that's a program that's currently in law. This increases that appropriation by $75,000 in 8 and in 9. And then the Fergus Falls marketing is for the now basically unused regional treatment center at Fergus Falls that is likely soon to be in the hands of the city. This gives them $200,000 a year to go out and try and develop the promotional material and do the marketing to try find some tenants for that regional treatment center. And this is that the transition reserve is the transfer of the money from the first biennium into the second so that we can pay for the more spending in 10-11 than we had in 8 and 9. And then the budget reserve, you can see $150 million is added to that. The rest of it is...
Summary of the revenue.
Summary of the...
Yep. Questions? Pretty clean bill in terms of these items.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's quite a bit of policy in here. We tried to go through and take the non-controversial things that members kind of wanted, and... why it took us so long. And we did leave a lot of the more controversial things like the dairy credit and the historic tax credit and the mother farm credits. Most of the sales and income tax credits were referred to the conference committee for them to deal with. There's an open conference committee on the tax bill. We felt those more controversial provisions belonged to be discussed down there and not done by an amendment to a vehicle bill. Mall of America, as much as I'd like to build it, is a subject of the conference committee for them to discuss. Thompson West is not in this bill. It will be a subject of the conference committee. The TIF for Egan is in here, but money for Thompson West, that I expect that'll be discussed in the conference committee. The federal conformity, which is about $32 million, is not in here. That's a subject for the conference committee. So that's about the extent of it, Mr. Chairman. It's pretty clean. There's not much money spent in here that's not being spent on property tax relief.
Okay.
The little bit of money that you do see spent in here, we tried to raise that money in the bill with the small revenue raisers that you see so that we could use. I didn't put the math to it, but I think almost all, within a small amount, of the target we received is spent on property tax relief for aid to townships, counties, or cities, and the property tax refund program. I'll have that number by the time we get to the floor, but it's very close. Just about the entire target is spent on property tax relief.
Or on the state-local fiscal relationship on aid.
Correct.
Yes.
That may be more accurately characterize that.
Because that doesn't always translate into property tax relief. It's equalization of services around the state. So, okay, this is being Xeroxed. We should get it very soon. Anything on the policy that you want to point out that might surprise people or anything of major controversy?
There is one provision that might make some of our cities uncomfortable. We did several local sales taxes, and we shut the door on them. We put a 3-year moratorium on the legislature considering any local option sales taxes.
Wow.
And my intent is to send a letter out to the members of the Senate prior to next year's session and say that members should discourage their cities from submitting local sales tax proposals to the Senate because the Senate Tax Committee does not plan to hear them.
Who did get a local sales tax this time?
Bemidji got one.
They had passed a referendum.
They had passed a referendum. Clearwater got one. Clearwater is...
For the highway interchange there they're trying to do?
No, Clearwater is the truck stop that you and I... They had already passed a referendum on it. Now, we narrowed that one up significantly to a pedestrian bridge and some... a community center and some land purchase for the community center. They wanted some other things.
Is that a Limmer proposal? Was that Limmer?
No, I believe that's in Center Coke's district.
Oh, Center Coke.
But they had already passed a referendum. And we included North Mankato. They had already passed a referendum that passed by, I think, about 70%. The issue in North Mankato is Mankato has one and North Mankato doesn't have one, and they found great support to pass that. And they, you know, like most cities, have some needs, and it was broadly supported by the community. We extended some other ones that are currently in law. We allowed for some additional uses of the one that's currently in law at Proctor. We extended the one in Cook County, that's a county-wide one, of 1% that's currently being used for the hospital and the nursing home for capital improvements. Those bonds are soon to be paid off, so we allowed them, with a new referendum, to be able to use that current 1% for some other uses that are capital in nature. The Duluth food and beverage tax is in here. That's what pays for the City of Duluth's local portion on the deck project.
And they had a referendum for that, I believe.
A referendum was not required on that, but they made a decision to go ahead with a referendum anyway, and it passed, I think, with about 61%. I think that's about the extent of the local sales tax things.
Okay, well, let's set this aside till we get the draft, and then Senator Bach, if you'll stick around, obviously. And let's have Senator Clark start to talk about the K-12 bill, or K-12 amendment. Good work, Senator Bach. I don't know. Do you want to ask?
I'll get him offline. Okay.
Senator Clark.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. We do not have a spreadsheet to pass out yet, but we thought what might make some sense is to at least start talking about what we'll be having in front of us hopefully very soon. One of the major goals for the Senate this year was to try to be stabilizing funding for schools, and I think we've largely work towards that goal here, there were several things that were a real challenge. As you're all aware, there is not a lot of revenue floating around, and for our schools, this has provided a particular challenge in trying to put together this amendment, because I know Senator Senjum will ask about it. The amount of money that we had to be working with was in 08-09 was $600 million permanent and about $200 million of one-time money. And then I believe it ended up being, one second. I wrote it on my other piece of paper, excuse me. $796 in the tails. And what we were able to do, first off, is we were able to go ahead and hold the Senate position on special ed. This is one of the most important things that we've done this session. And that's the piece that we felt really was going to help our districts come to an even playing field. It's the cap gap that we are funding. For all districts, they will be getting a significant increase through this method, but we will finally start repaying what essentially was taken from our schools in 2003 with the gap, the cap put on. And if you want to have, we can talk more about that, but that's been a significant part of what we've been working on in Senator Stump's committee this year, and I think it's a real testament of his work and the committee's work that we were able to keep that. The House was particularly concerned, though, about how we could also make sure then that if we've leveled that playing field, that there is at least some additional revenue for our schools. And that was a real struggle because, as you're aware, we had a pretty low target in our education bill in the Senate to begin with, and we were not able to fund anything on the formula. What we've ended up doing is we are providing a 2% increase, but it's flat. So it's 2% in the first year at $190 million and $220 in the tails. We were not able to do, we did not have a property tax target within this. So we were not able to do some of the work that the committee had done in that area, and that was quite a disappointment. In both of these areas, should we be able to find and work out some additional revenue with the governor, those would both be good places to make an investment, is trying to do two and two and trying to make sure that we've got some property tax relief there as well.
Senator Clark, I think it's important at this point to mention what is not in here. There is not a revenue raiser.
Yes. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I did not point that out. This bill, like the others that are coming before it, is not paid with new revenue. We were used within what I usually tend to describe as the inflation that was available to the state as we were putting money forward with a little bit of that one-time money. So the one-time money that's about $1 billion, we got $200 million. And then we ended up participated in the 2% and 2% that really was inflation, but no money was for this bill was done out of new revenue. The House had had a real strong goal of trying to move towards all day,
Senator
every
Clark,
day.
Senator Clark, I think more accurately, I think you have to be a little careful there. There is the FOC provision in the omnibus tax bill creates revenue, so there is a little money that goes to the Finance Committee side.
I thought he said it was all used in this bill.
Well,
no.
I think close, but the bills all interact together.
Mr. Chairman, that's because some of the money we use is one-time money.
So some of the permanent money would be used in the finance side from the FOCs. So they all's balanced together, all the bills balanced together as a total package, and the no additional revenue raisers are necessary for all of these bills that we've just done the last day. Need additional money over and above what you just saw in the tax bill. It all balances. There's biennial structural balance. Very close on biennial structural balance, but that also includes Senator Berglund's bill, all these bills. It's very tight. Senator Clark. Oh, I think on the special ed, the first year, some one-time money was freed up from the Senate position because the first year we had retroactively paid for the special ed gap.
Correct, Mr. Chair. Originally, we were paying some money in 2007. And given what the money we had to work with, we could not do that. So instead, we freed that up, which helped a little bit in the coming biennium.
And that, in essence, was about $100 million that would have gone out to districts.
That's not
under the Senate bill. That is not here. That, in essence, in some sense, freed that up for the rest of the budget.
Mr. Chair, I think the other piece that might be worth noting from what you were saying is so that essentially all of these bills are paid for within either that current money or tightening up and collecting taxes or getting taxes that maybe people have been avoiding paying to the state.
So the other, all of this now has structural balance, biennial structural balance, not year-to-year structural balance, but biennial structural balance. A good goal would be to get to year-to-year structural balance, which is we're getting close. And then inflation is covered in all these in this whole package and would be part of the forecast in the future.
Chair Clark.
What else is in?
So the two biggest things are one is going ahead and taking care of the cap gap, so we're fixing the unpaid bill, as it were, and two is at least starting to be putting some formula increase, even though it's flat. There, I would call it, we're making a down payment on all day, every day kindergarten. It too is a flat appropriation of $43 million in the first biennium, and same with the second biennium. One of the things that was really hard to be losing that was really from the 1611 bill was our early childhood, our pre-kindergarten allowances. We did not have the resources within this bill. Those of you know who I'm a hopeful person, hope that in the next few days we can figure out how we can make sure we're closing the achievement gap through figuring out how to get some money for that. We are capping QCOMP with the Senate position, the districts that are currently in. Will remain in. We were not able to fund more districts. That was the governor's position, but we believe that it's really important that we were able to go ahead and keep the current districts that are participating. And there's been some studies that have shown that you really need between 5 and 7 years to evaluate the effectiveness of an approach, and so we think it's important that we're also taking a look at that. So we're continuing that program. We are just not expanding it. There was about $60 million of smaller pieces, and I'll just tell you a few of them. There's $8 million in each biennium for gifted and talented. There is some one-time money, $3 million for math and science academies. Safe Schools Levy, that was particularly important to Senator Wieger, is funded at $4 million and $9 million. Reading Intervention was funded at $3 million and $2 million. We kept the Senate position. It was a similar position in the House on nutrition. There's a little bit extra for lunches. Libraries, for the first time in a very long time, will be getting an increase, $10 million in the first biennium and $8 million in the second biennium. And out of one-time money, we have an allocation for the Hennepin, Minneapolis library merger. And statewide testing is at $9 million in each biennium. We've taken $150 million of one-time money and essentially put it into operating capital expenditures that will go out on a per-pupil basis. It can be used for things like technology or science equipment, textbooks, teacher training, energy, those kinds of things. It gives a lot of flexibility to our districts. And we felt like it was very important that districts who particularly have been struggling with cuts in many, many things, had an opportunity to have some flexibility to be innovative or take care of some basic needs. And on a local level, they'll know best what they really need. We did a few different local projects, the War Road Angle Inlet, Browns Valley declining pupil from the flood, McGregor declining pupil, Red Lake declining pupil. There's just a few of these I'm going to tell you because some of you are interested. Clearbrook, Gonvick demolition, Eden Valley Watkins from the mercury spill, Red Rock Central Fund Transfer, Floodwood Fund Transfer, and Plainview Count Consolidation. Early ed, this again, one of the things, because the bulk of the resources went into fixing the cap gap and trying to do something with formula. This is an area that certainly is near and dear to my heart, and we are not able to do the kinds of things I would like to see happening. In addition to the money going towards everyday, all-day kindergarten, we are continuing the Senate position and the House position on ECFE at $6 and $6 million. There'll be additional $2 million each for school readiness and Head Start in each of the bienniums. And there's $5 million in the first biennium for after-school programs. And that's going to be able to make it so that we can get some matching funds from McKnight. A couple other things I think people might be interested in is Senator Olson had a provision that had to do with American Indian Scholarship Transfer. Their world language, the Mandarin Chinese, is included in that. There is a special ed task force. We will be continuing to be looking at the work that PS Minnesota began. And
It's kind of a combination of approaches that the House and the Senate were looking at. We will be contracting out with somebody, but there will be legislative involvement as they move forward. From a department standpoint, the bulk of the resources there end up being the 3% compensation. There's some additional funds for the Purpich Center and the State Academies, and there's a small amount of money for the Duluth Children's Museum. We do not have the charter school cap that we were looking at, and I think of great disappointment at this point is that the House has declined to take us up on the consolidation levy, and this is something Senator Stumpf has worked long and hard on. It's something we think they're wrong about, but as we've been having informal conversations about how we can make this bill work, we could not get that in at this point. And again, it's something else. If there would be some additional resources and further conversations, I think would be important to be in here. So we've focused again on stabilizing funding. We have set the groundwork for some good things in terms of early intervention, on trying to close the achievement gap, on some of the possibilities are out there for additional rigor in schools. And I think that there is a lot to be working towards in the future. But these are still pretty, you know, trying to fix the hole, as it were, in the bucket is a really good step forward. And, again, took up the bulk of really a lot of these resources. And we don't have a spreadsheet yet, Mr. Chair, but if we have anybody's questions, I will try to do things from memory.
So the big pieces are Senate special ed cap gap without the 07 amount. Is it 1.5 or 2 on the formula?
It's 2, but it's flat, so it's two, essentially 2 and 0.
2 and 0, which translates, as Senator Olson knows, that's in the real world, to a layperson, that's 2 and 2,
right,
than 2 and 4. 2 and 0 in our parlance is 2 and 2. It's flat. 796 tails, those small provisions that were all from the House, not so small.
And Mr. Chair,
that 60 million,
a number of those provisions are in both the House and Senate bills, or they're things that we would have liked to, in general, not exclusively, would like to have purchased had we had more money in the Senate bill. There's a lot of interest, for example, around libraries, et cetera.
Then $150 million one time per pupil spread out evenly to the districts for deferred maintenance, technology, safety, apparently. And then what is not in here is Senator Clark's 3- and 4-year-old program. What other major thing in the Senate bill is not in here? Is that it?
Well, like I said, since we didn't have a levy target, we did not get to really help with that part of the stabilizing and did not get the...
Well, the consolidation is not in here.
Right.
Consolidation.
Something we want to keep working on.
Senator Frederickson first.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Clark, you referenced a couple fund transfers. And I didn't hear all of them mentioned. Are there more than you mentioned that are in the bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson, in all honesty, there might have been one that I missed, but I know that yours was in it, if that helps.
Got through there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Clark, that singular reference is what I'm concerned because I had two that...
Do you want to, Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson, if you want to refresh my recollection of what the other one was, I might be able to tell you others. We'll have to wait for the spreadsheet.
You referenced Red Rock Central, which I share with Senator Vickerman. The other one is Comfrey.
I'm going to have to check on that. I apologize. I want to say yes, but I'm going to have to check on that.
Senator Bergen.
We're trying that.
Senator Bergen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Clark, you mentioned something about funding all-day kindergarten. What exactly are you doing with that?
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, there's $43 million in each biennium that will start us on our way towards all-day, every-day kindergarten. It is on the wait, and I cannot tell you right now what that number is. I've been waiting for what the actual weight is. It's a little less.
You
than
back that. Into it. You have a dollar right. amount, and you back into the
right. And so, it's purely an economic issue right now. If
this
we
is about
had
half
more resources,
it's
we
about
would
half
more.
The House provision. Is that
correct?
It's about half the House.
So
provision.
School districts will get some money for all day kindergarten, and some of the kids will be able to have all day kindergarten.
They'll expand what they're currently doing.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, I believe that at least my preference would have been that we would have done it through first grade preparedness because we could have targeted to the kids that were most at risk. But I think they felt pretty strongly that we start working towards the weight, and that there's a lot of good reason to do that as well. So it's a good start. It's going to help, I think, and it's because every district will get it. It means that every district will be able to start working towards making sure that kids are able to participate.
But when she says the weight, I think it's, I don't, it increases the weighting for that age of child. Remember, there's a different weight for kindergartners, first to third graders, I think, high schoolers, and this increases the weight for this group of children. And I don't know if that means it's over 1% now or not. It's something.
Mr. Chair, it's nowhere near that. They originally the House, with their numbers, had gotten up to about 0.84 or so. So it will be significantly less than that.
Senator Berglund.
And so then, Mr. Chairman and Senator Clark, is the all day kindergarten funding flat for the TAILS?
Yes, it is, Senator Berglund.
Okay.
Yes.
Which, again, if we have more resources, is something that should be attended to, because that obviously is not the way that you sustain or grow a program.
In both of these bills, the formula amount is flat. The special ed does have the growth factor in it. And in the tax bill, the aides are flat, LGA county aides.
Mr. Chair, that is one of the things that was critically important for those of you who don't serve on the Education Committee, is there has been no growth factor since 2003 for the state portion of the special ed fund. So we really have been going backwards. So the main thing that it does is, again, on the cap gap, as it were, we're put back in about a 4.5% growth factor. That's about what the districts, it's the increases are, the increased costs are. It also has a 2% on the excess cost, which doesn't quite get us where we need to go in the long run there, but it's, we've really fixed a major problem in this bill.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator Clark, did the removal of the 95% cliff on the equity revenue that was in both bills, was that included?
Yes, Senator Olson.
And the 287 safety, safe schools levy?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, what we did with the safe schools, it's $4 million in the first biennium and $9 million in the second. And so I'm not exactly sure how that translates. Those are the numbers that the House had, and we agreed to those.
Mr. Chairman, I think that was an authority issue. Much as money.
And unfortunately, because I don't have the language in front of me right now, I can't pull
Kevin,
that one
do you know?
Off the top of my head. Excuse me while I get some technical.
And the one, did you just ask about the charter school cap?
Pardon me?
Did you ask about the charter school cap?
I did mention that we did not.
Do the Senate version.
Although it is something that we still believe strongly should be looked at, not because there aren't some great things happening with charter schools, but
some believe strongly.
There are a number of different things that Senator Stump and others on the committee felt very strongly about looking into. And right now it is on the list of the Legislative Audit Commission. If the legislative auditor has the resources to do it, they will be reviewing this, and we think that's an important thing. Thank you for money. And Mr. Chair, going back to Senator Frederickson, we did the list that I went through cost money. We accepted all the ones that did not cost money. So my guess is that your other one did not cost money.
Did cost money. So Comfrey was not in or is in?
Did it cost money? I mean, I don't recall it being on our list, on our spreadsheet, where it cost money. It wasn't on the spreadsheet to begin with, so I think that you're okay. But we'll double check it.
See.
We'll double check it in the next couple hours. And
any further expansion on Senator Olson's?
So I was just looking at intermediate safe schools levy. So it's under that language, but that's the best I can tell you without actually having the the language in front of me. But it is on our previous spreadsheet, Senator Olson, it's under the same thing, but it's funded with those other numbers, it's a higher number.
If we have something.
So the bill, again, I think it helps us to go ahead and deal with the funding stability, provides a good path for building on foundation with some things that the House, the Senate, and the governor all share in the future, and allows our local districts with that one-time money to do some things that both are pretty basic, but also allows them on the local determination level an ability to make some decisions.
Senator Clark, language, anything, tell us about language in the bill that either people are eagerly waiting to find out if it's in or out?
Well, I think that the charter schools language might have been one of the bigger ones that people were waiting for. The House had, on the early education, had several pieces of language that we took. We were interested in. They just did not happen to be in our bill. It wasn't that people weren't interested. They had done their department language, and they had done some very good work. We took language that was in common. I do not believe that there was anything that we took that was controversial. So I don't know that there's anything else that anybody would have been waiting for with great bated breath, as it were. As in the other bills, the House had significantly more policy than the Senate did. And so we were pretty careful about the things that we took or that we amended. One of the areas that was important that Senator Rummel had been working on had to do with the area of accountability and report cards, and she had been working with Representative Mariani on those issues over the last couple weeks, as Senator Olson probably remembers. And they came up with a couple of amendments to language the House had that Senator Rummel felt was very important and I think will be a good reflection of work that was done. One piece that is not in there that we believe the department can do, but we just didn't quite get in there, had to do with the early intervention that Senator Saltzman had been working on. Again, if we have another opportunity to do something, we will. And the last one that I almost forgot.
Did you say not in there?
Sir.
It's not in it.
The response to intervention?
No. The language that we've been playing with is not in there right now. But it's something we'll continue to work on.
In the
Open Conference Committee. And the other one is that Sarah Pappas and others for a number of years have been working on comprehensive sex education. The House had it in their bill in almost the same form as it's been in the Senate for many years. It was not in our bill, but it's something many members are interested in. It remarkably stayed in, and they had 119 votes on the floor on it, and we have accepted that provision. So that's the other piece that people may be interested in.
Mr. Chairman, you have accepted that? I thought you said you were not including any of the controversial things.
No, I said I didn't think there was anything that was going to be particularly controversial. When the House got 119 votes for their education bill with it in it, we didn't believe that that was particularly controversial. It's been a long Senate position. It was not something that we had any indication from the governor's office previously that they had an issue with, so we did not believe that it was going to end up being a problem.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Clark, I would beg to disagree, but I won't discuss that right at the moment. But what about the other one that we've heard an awful lot about, and that's teen screen?
I do not believe that that's in there.
Teen screen?
It was the mental health thing. There was a lot of controversy. I'm not sure just how much was warranted.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I don't believe.
Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it was in a House provision for their human services bill and was taken out before it got to Congress. So I don't think it was ever in the education bill.
Senator Olson, is it good to be taken out or it's bad that it was taken out?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we heard from both sides on the issue, but it's something I'm not real clear on whether the folks that were very apprehensive about it being a voluntary thing, whether that was well warranted or not. That's why, but it certainly was controversial in terms of the level of communication on it.
And Senator Clark, on the sex education piece, it is the House language. whatever
the
House
Act. Language, but there was a modification. It is an opt out, which is what is occurring in the districts for the most part that have that right now.
Well, Mr.
And
Chair,
that is the language, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, that the Senate has passed previously.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I think my issue is why we should be putting a statutory mandate for something that is, I think there's some growing controversy, and what has concerned me most recently, and I will share that, is after the Minneapolis Community College foot washing incident, I was reading some of the response from one of the Muslim community that was ridiculing the treatment, the fact that talking about their approach and their values on personal cleanliness, both in terms of not only foot washing but use of toilet facilities, and ridiculing the fact that you could go in their toilets and they had free condom dispensers for casual sex, but no facility for washing, as they do in other parts of the world. And it's one of the things that within that particular culture and religious faith, there is a great disrespect for the cultural degradation, which includes the sexual mores, and the comprehensive sex ed takes a very valueless approach to sexual behavior. And so you look at that, it contributes to the disrespect from that whole religious view, that if you've been following it all, is key to those who are extreme in that particular view, that we should, death to us. So I dislike the idea of putting that mandate to schools that they have to have this approach.
But there's apparently an opt-out.
Pardon?
There's an opt-out if school district.
There's an opt-out. And
the school board chooses not to.
Correct. The school board could choose not to. And very importantly, parents can choose to opt out of it. And as somebody who has, at an earlier point in my life, spent a lot of time working with pregnant and parenting teenagers and had been part of the demonstration projects under the Reagan administration that was mostly a just say no approach, as well as this other type of approach. I mean, it is very important that parents are actively involved in talking with their kids, and a big part of all of this is making sure that there is clear communication. And it is important that local districts are respectful of what their parents are wanting.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Clark, I that's why I believe that the local school districts should be making that kind of decision themselves, working with the nature of the communities that they are serving and making those decisions rather than us telling them what to do.
Senator Olson, I can tell you and members of the committee that although I think Senator Clark probably supports this language, she did resist having it in this bill to the wee hours of the morning.
Mr. Chair, members, I think one of the very last things that was taken.
And I think
it
is fair.
After we got something we wanted.
And I think it is fair to say Senator Clark genuinely resisted having it in this bill, even though she probably supports the language.
Yes.
And that is probably an item we'll be checking with the executive branch on. So Senator Senjum and I have copies of the tax language. Senator Olson, I don't know if you want to look at it here. Senator Bach, was there anything you wanted to point out in the language? Members, what I'd like to do, there's a couple of copies being made now. What I'd like to do is ask for the committee to be willing to place this language on the House file and then take that report on the floor. It appears that unless something shows up here in the next, not going to happen. The education one is being printed off now, the original. And so I think what we're going to need to do is send House File 2245 to the floor as is. And then as soon as that amendment is available, get it to everybody. And then we would need an amendment on the floor to put it on the floor. I think it's germane enough that that's pretty good for the situation. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Council has a small technical amendment to the bill. So once we put it on, we have a small technical amendment before we were to vote to send it on.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment is just
relating to the lifting the securities fee cap, the same amendment is needed to two different sections of the law, and both of them were in the environment bill this year. And what's in the delete everything amendment, the main document, is one of the two, and this is the other one. So it's the same language. It just appears in two different sections of the law.
Okay, so Senator Bach moves the SCH-22-68A-1. How's that one?
Should we move the original amendment first?
It's the same number.
Mr. Chairman, this is really calling to your attention this issue that will be brought forward as a floor amendment. It's
okay,
too late
okay.
to get this included
okay.
in the actual committee report. But it will need to be a floor amendment to the engrossment.
And it's language that's already in the bill, but it's going to be added in a different section also.
Similar language has to go in twice. So.
Okay, we have some copies.
Just to indicate to the members that this is something that will be coming up on the floor as an amendment to this bill, and that it was heard here in the Rules Committee.
Senator has one. Senator Berglund? And Senator Langseth have one, and Cohen?
You want it? It's for you.
What?
My early morning reading.
Do you have one, Senator Olson, now?
That's right.
We're sharing one.
It's
That's
fine.
Okay.
okay. I looked at yours.
Okay. So with the committee's indulgence, Senator Bach moves to delete everything onto House File 2268, the A071005.
Through the amendment, just...
This is the whole. This is the whole thing.
The whole bill.
Senator Bach.
I did do the math on the target versus how much money went into aids and credits, and the target was $420 million, and the total amount of LGA county aid, property tax refund, and township aid is $425 million. So we actually put $5 million into additional aids and credits than was in our target. So I think it's fair to say we spent our target on aids and credits to local units of government or on direct property tax relief to homeowners. And I should just say, members, this is TIF light. Representative Lencheski is very pure on TIF, and most of the Senate provisions that we would have liked to adopt on behalf of our members and were in the sitting in the Senate Conference Committee, Representative Chesky was unwilling to take, so they will continue to be a subject of discussion in the Tax Conference Committee.
Okay, so on the Bach motion to adopt the A071005 to House File 2268. Discussion. All in favor? Senator Bach, probably
somewhat not related, and don't spend a lot of time on it, but you made a comment at the end of your testimony about local option sales taxes on into the future. There are probably some communities out there that are talking about various plans that would relate to some form of sales tax. Is that your plan, basically, put a 3-year moratorium on them?
That's what's in the bill, and the House badly wanted to slam the door permanently on this, and we had a long discussion about it. Currently, there are cities going out and running referendums prior to coming to the legislature, and then people in their community kind of have developed this entitlement mentality. If they run their referendum first, that they should then, the legislature should then just give it to them. And we did that for Bemidji, for Mankato, and for Clearwater this year, who all ran referendums in advance of the legislative session, and we're very concerned about the entitlement mentality that that creates at home. But
okay, so on the Bach motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Senator Bach then moves that House File 2268, as amended, be referred to the floor without recommendation. discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Okay, then, members, this is a copy of the education bill. I would like to adopt it, put it on. I only have one copy. I would like to put it on, and we could also send the bill as by itself. I think Senator Clark's been fairly thorough in this, and it's without recommendation, so I think that should give some comfort to members. So Senator Clark moves the SH2245R. Oh, committee report. So what's the...
Yeah, we'll do adopt the committee report.
Oh, we'll adopt the committee report, just as is.
Yeah.
So Senator Clark moves that we adopt the committee report, SH2245R, which will put the delete everything on to 2245, House File 2245. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, motion adopted.
We don't need it anymore because we just did the committee report.
So we just did the committee report. We don't have to do it anymore. Members, we will, I really appreciate members' indulgence, and I want to make it clear that we will not process these last two bills for many, many hours, so we want people to read it. It will be online
shortly,
and we will go to the floor now and adopt those two committee reports on the floor, and then adjourn yesterday's legislative day. And then we will come in, I believe it's 10 o'clock for the new legislative day. So, members, appreciate your patience. Committee is adjourned.